You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, July 20th, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is The Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, casual-ish Friday, Cliff Schechter will be joining us. Also, later in the program, the wonderful Isabel Gillies will be joining us with a recommendation for me to watch a movie this weekend on a streaming device. With that said, I probably won't have the opportunity. I am headed to Seattle. More on that in just a moment. Today on the program, we'll talk briefly about this Aurora shooting. 12 people reportedly dead, at least 50 others injured. More on that later. The administration looking to change the terms of student debt, at least a little. Horrible story of cruelty on the border. Undocumented workers being targeted. We'll get to that post office story. And apparently you can strip naked when you go through a TSA checkpoint. If you're doing it to protest the security theater that goes on there, as opposed to just your desire to be naked. Just a little quick house cleaning. I'm going to be at the 1090 AM Seattle Forum tomorrow night in Seattle. And so if you're in the Seattle area, you can check that out. We'll have a link to it on our blog at majority.fm. I'll be there. Papantonio, Randy Rhodes, Tom Hartman, Norman Goldman, Ron Reagan. I think Congressman McDermott is going to be talking. Always looking forward to that. It's a lot of travel, and as such, there will be no show on Monday. You know, it's the summer, dog days of summer. Okay, well, all that said, and Cliff is going to join us a little bit later than normal today. He is on the road, but I want to talk about this, and I know Cliff is going to want to talk about it because, of course, you know that he works on gun control. And just to start off, the facts, a gunman wearing a gas mask, wearing a Kevlar vest, I don't know if he was wearing any other type of body armor, basically set off, went into a theater through a side door, set off some type of tear gas or something like that, dropped it in there and started to fire into a crowded movie theater in Aurora, Colorado, which is a suburb of Denver, at a midnight opening of the new Batman movie. Like I said, killed at least 12 people, wounded at least 50 others, some of whom were children. He's been identified as guy named James Holmes, 24 years old, I guess. The shooter used four guns, at least. Some type of assault rifle, a shotgun, and two handguns. Apparently, he also booby-trapped his apartment. He was caught and arrested in a parking lot behind the theater. He was taken without resistance. He apparently told the cops that he had booby-trapped his apartment. They're, I think, on the scene now, trying to get in there without without setting off the booby traps. His apartment building has been cleared. And apparently he was a PhD candidate in neuroscience at the University of Colorado, was in the process of withdrawing. You know, no one knows why he did this. I don't know if there's ever a... I don't know if anybody ever really knows why someone does something like this. Obviously, you've got to be pretty mentally disturbed. And I want to talk a little bit about... I mean, you know, I don't generally cover stuff like this in the main or beyond a brief mention. And a couple of people have written pieces talking about, let's avoid politics in this discussion of the Colorado shooting. And of course, I agree with that sentiment to a point. I don't think people should be talking about, does this help or hurt electoral races? I think it's stupid to talk about somehow Batman movies cause problems. There was a report that this guy apparently was affiliated with the Tea Party, which of course was, you know, someone Googled. I mean, it's not like the guy James Holmes is that particularly a distinct name. And it was reported and then and mistakenly reported. And all of that aspect of it, supposedly politics, I guess, with a capital P, is secondary. And James Jamal Bowie, I don't know where he wrote this. I think he writes for the American Prospect, but he writes a couple other places. I don't know where I picked this up, but he says it's important to recognize the extent to which stricter gun laws aren't a solution that will do away with mass shootings. That may be the case. He also mentions later in the piece that, well, yes, of course, some probably would be prevented, if only because in the attempt to get guns, if it was harder to get guns, someone would be caught or flagged or whatnot. You're not going to get rid of mass shootings simply by changing gun laws. And he writes that Anil Dash, who writes that we marginalize and neglect our sons when they feel vulnerable, stigmatize depression and schizophrenia, treat violence as entertainment. Yes, this is a cultural problem. But it's also a political one. I mean, as an example, listen to Congressman Louie Gohmert from Texas, who apparently was on Heritage.org radio at the time that this story broke. And they asked him about it. And here is his response in terms of why things like this happen.
You know, we were going to talk about other things, but since you are a former judge and you dealt with criminal cases on the bench, and I don't know that you ever had something that was such a crime that is senseless as we seem to be seeing in this theater shooting with at least a dozen people killed evidently in Aurora, Colorado. What is your experience with the way that we have too many twisted minds in our society?
Well, some of us happen to believe that when our founders talked about guarding our virtue and freedom, that that was imported, you know, whether it's John Adams saying our Constitution was made only for moral and religious people, it's wholly inadequate to government of any others. Ben Franklin, only a virtuous people are capable of freedom. As nations become corrupt and vicious, they have more need of masters. I mean, it goes on and on. You know, George Washington, all the dispositions and habits which lead to political prosperity, religion, morality, are indispensable support. We have been at war with the very pillars, the very foundation of this country. And when, you know, what really gets me as a Christian is to see the ongoing attacks on Judeo-Christian belief, and then some senseless, crazy act of terror like this takes place.
So wait a second. So now Louis Gohmert here offers his notion of why these things happen, because we have been at war with the pillars of our country, because we have been attacking Judeo-Christian values. Now, I actually think this genre of critique is not incongruous with the situation. I just happen to think that his perspective on it is completely insane. Not only do I think that we have not been at war with the pillars of our democracy or this country, nor do I think that we have been engaging in an attack on Judeo-Christian values. I think that's just insane. But I think one could make an argument that we have created an environment in this country surrounding violence and guns that promotes these type of attacks. And to say that politics are not involved in that is to completely ignore what constitutes the vast majority of our news, what constitutes the vast majority. We don't have social philosophers that are on our TV on a daily basis, or on our radios on a daily basis, or writing our books that are getting to the bestseller lists. We have politicians, we have political fighters, if you want, whatever you want to call them. And so that affects our culture and our society as much as anything. And when you have people like Louis Gohmert, or I don't know, name 50 other politicians who are going around saying that, you know, the idea that Ted Nugent is getting these talking points about people coming for your guns, about the race war that's coming, or that we've got to protect our Second Amendment rights with a, you know, or we'll take them out at the with bullets instead of ballots. This is the crap that's floating around in the ether. So Louis Gohmert has his idea of what's creating this. It's the attack on the war on the pillars of our democracy, and an attack on Judeo-Christian values. And I have my notion of what creates this environment. And I would think, and I'm willing to any objective standard, as to tell me which is permeating our discourse more. What national leaders are going up there and waging a war on the pillars of our democracy? Other than them, you know, and the people who are buying our democracy, they're not advertising it. You know, so today, this morning, when the NRA tweets out, "Hey, good morning, shooters. Happy Friday. Weekend plans." When the NRA is putting out push polling, I want you to listen to something that a listener sent us from the NRA that they're sending to people's homes. Now, I want you to understand something. I am not blaming the NRA for this shooting. I am blaming the NRA for being a massive contributor to a context which breeds this stuff. So you need to have a context where this stuff grows. There's a reason why we get more of this than, say, Canada. And more of it per capita than, say, Canada. So when there are hundreds of millions of dollars going out to send this message to people that they're coming for your guns and this and that, it permeates society. Play it.
Inspection, supervision, tracking, tracing, surveillance, marking, documentation, verification, paper trails, data banks, new global agencies, and data centers. Nowhere do we find any thought about respecting anyone's right of self-defense, privacy, property, due process, or observing personal freedom of any kind. There is only one solution, the complete removal of civilian firearms from the scope of any treaty. I will repeat that point, as it is critical and not subject to negotiation. Civilian firearms must not be a part of any treaty. On this, there can be no compromise. Therefore, the NRA will fight with all of its strength to defeat any treaty that includes civilian firearms within its scope. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
The question we're asking is, do you think it's okay for the UN to be on American soil attacking our gun rights? Let me repeat that. Do you think it's okay for the UN to be on American soil attacking our gun rights? If you do not think it's okay for the UN to be attacking our gun rights, please press 1 now. If you do think it's okay for the UN to be attacking our gun rights, please press 2 now. Thank you for taking the time to listen to our call and for taking our survey.
Okay.
Please call 1-866.
Now, what this latest NRA push poll is about the UN arms trade treaty talks, which has nothing to do with in any way inhibiting people's right to carry guns in this country. But the NRA generates money off of this stuff. It creates a sense of paranoia. It creates a sense that there are people coming who are going to put you in some type of FEMA camps. So you better be armed. And the idea that this doesn't permeate society, it doesn't create some type of like cesspool in which it plays on those who have mental problems in our society. Look, you know, they got mental problems with people in Canada too. It's the context. It's the context that is created. And so to say that there is nothing in our politics that creates this is absolutely wrong. People use this stuff as a way of raising money for political purpose. They use it for electoral advantage. They use it to enrich themselves via our political process. To say that that these events have nothing to do with politics is to say that there's no politics in our society, that politics don't permeate what we do. It's ludicrous. All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll be talking to Cliff Schechter. I'm sure we'll have something to say to this. All right, we got to take a break. We'll be right back.
Is an idiot.
Here it is, the Republicans' health care plan for America. Don't get sick.
If you think that's a fair ad, okay, then you're a Republican and an asshole. Have at it, Hoss. Be in that party. Despicable, man.
They're the bad guys.
Endless taxpayer bailout.
Yeah, that's not true.
When Obama won, the reason why we worked so hard for him,
we didn't want a garden variety politician.
Taking a stand, not just cutting deals.
That's what vision is. Yeah. That's what vision is.
The Best of the Left podcast. The best of the truly liberal media. Edited, organized, and mixed. Only at bestoftheleft.com.
Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. If you want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schachter, LibertasLLC.com.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen, Cliff Schachter. Cliff, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Sammy. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing all right. You know, this, these type of things, what's going on in Colorado are just so horrible. And I know you work quite a bit on gun control issues, I know you're on the road too. You may not have had a chance to be updated on the stuff, but give me your take. I mean, I just spent a couple minutes talking about how, you know, there are people saying this shouldn't be about politics, and I agree to the extent that it shouldn't be about electoral politics. But we create,
right.
But electoral politics and our policy also create a context where insane people like this guy's obviously insane, it creates an environment that nurtures certain, that preys upon insane people.
Yeah, this is this faux centristy crap. I'm sorry, I feel rather strongly about this, as you may have heard me discuss these things before, and I do about this too. And to me, this is the same I can say whatever I want on your show, right, Sam?
Yes.
Edited for, once again, this is the same third-way bullshit we hear all the time. You know, everybody just needs to work together and, you know, let's not jump to conclusions and we can't talk about politics. Absolutely, it would be crass and despicable, I think, to talk about this in terms of electoral politics. You know, will Colorado go more Obama? You know, no, that I honestly do think that would be wrong to do. However, when it comes to what it is that occurred, why it occurred, and what could prevent this kind of thing in the future, to not talk about it, that's the NRA's game. Don't politicize it. And to them, politicizing it is bringing up the fact that they've ensured that most states don't have background checks when for people who are mentally insane, drug abusers, who are criminals, who are terrorists, and the rest to buy guns. This is that they claim they want to stop, you know, guns from getting in the hands of criminals, but they've actually fought in a number of states for violent felons and domestic abusers to get their gun rights reinstated. Their business plan is for people to die. They have enough blood on their hands to fill many swimming pools. They are evil, evil people. I think Lawrence O'Donnell pointed out once on his show, when he got in a spat with LaPierre, that LaPierre, there's no lobbyist has more blood on their hands than LaPierre does. Every day of his life since the late 70s when he got into this, he wakes up and tries to find a way to undermine gun laws. And that's basically the truth here. And we don't know exactly what happened, but we do know the culture that's been created. We do know that basic laws and that the CDC is, for example, can't keep track of certain statistics and what goes on with guns because they've been intimidated by legislators because of the NRA. We do know that the ATF and the FBI can't share certain information that would help track guns because of the fact that the NRA will not allow that to happen and has bought off enough legislators. We do know the fact that the only gun control measure at all that, that President Obama has even tried to enact, which is to trace long guns that are bought in bulk going across the border, where 48,000 Mexicans have died since 2009 in the drug war, not to mention countless Americans, that the NRA has fought that. These are all facts, you know, and they can't be disputed as much as the crazy people on the right would like to. That this is the NRA's business model. Fewer and fewer people who are younger are buying guns. So the way they gin up their gun sales, they should remind you what Big Tobacco did 20 or 30 years ago. They need to find new markets. They need to make sure so that that means gun running, and that means they need to find ways to scare people that wouldn't normally buy guns into buying guns, and all sorts of things like that. And this is, don't make a mistake for a second that this isn't part of their business model, because it is. Okay, I guess I'm done with my rant now.
Well, no, we just played a push poll that one of our listeners had sent in actually a couple of days ago. Sort of ginning up this sort of paranoia that now it's the UN, if it's not Obama, right? And it's not somebody else coming to get your guns. It's the UN coming to get your guns. And we're going to fight this.
Either the black guy or the black helicopters, one or the other, right?
Indeed. And you can't, you know, you look at like these stand your ground laws, you look at this, the idea that both from a rhetorical standpoint that we're not creating a context that that plays on, you know, I don't doubt that the NRA does not have the agenda to trigger insane people. Of course they don't. But the point is, this is a byproduct of their business model, which is no different than the byproduct of a business model that ends up dumping pollutants into our rivers. You know, this is cost that they're externalizing to society, and the rest of us suck it up. The cost in this case comes in the, you know, every month or so we have some type of mass murder, you know, Alabama last month or whatever it was. And this is an externality that we absorb as a society for their business model.
That's exactly right. And I just try to make sure people don't just talk about this, you know, and I've talked about this ad nauseum on your show, many other places, you know, which is if people fall into their model of it's a social issue, they want to make it cultural, it's not. Because in a poll that I did with the group I work with, Mayors Against Illegal Guns, I didn't do the poll, but a poll we did, that we purposely hired Frank Luntz to do it, because let's see the conservatives try to undermine him, then that 70% of NRA members believe there should be background checks at gun shows. 80% of NRA members think that people who are on the terror watch list shouldn't have access to guns. Even 60% or 58, I think in the high 50s, believe that there should be gun registration, all right? They create this fake, it's like the fake debate created over Social Security, where we must do, you know, we have to rein in Social Security, like that's the problem with the budget. It's a fake debate these guys create, because they know that most people are against them. And in the end, most of their own members are against them and don't even know what these guys stand for. They are the ultimate one percenters. If you think about people that pollute your environment, and a byproduct of that is people get cancer and die so they can make more money. The NRA is a front for I've said this again and again. Their board is littered with members of gun manufacturers. There's all sorts of events they do are sponsored by gun manufacturers. It's very simple. Their model is to sell more guns. They don't care who dies. And I will say to you, it may not be, you're right, they may not be like, let's trigger crazy people, but I promise you for one second they don't mind. If a crazy person does something like this and leads to more people to buy guns, that's okay. Because the truth is that if they know that their rhetoric is leading to that, they know their rhetoric leads to a guy in Pittsburgh shooting four policemen who come to his house because he thinks that, or three, because he thinks that Obama's coming to take his guns. It leads to a guy in California buying a gun and showing up at the Pentagon and shooting people because he thinks the government's coming to get him. This doesn't come from nowhere. If you read the NRA emails, like I do because I have to, because of what I do, if you see the emails they send out constantly, if you see the speeches they make constantly, if you see all this, they are preying on paranoid and, let's just call it what they are, crazy members of society, scaring them into buying more guns and shooting at anything that moves. And then you throw in these unbelievable fucking imbeciles like Louis Gohmert, who must be the stupidest person alive. You know, I guess if you take out Michelle Bachmann and Alan West, I mean, the people like that represent us in what's supposed to be a body, a representative body, and legislate and vote on things. That this guy's response to this whole thing is, if only more people had guns. Talk to some of the guys like Colin Goddard, you know, and Omar Samaha, who lost his sister, and Colin Goddard, who was shot at Virginia Tech, and they'll tell you what would have happened if more people in that classroom, that French classroom, had guns.
Right.
Like people that are not trained by the military, you know, I mean, even in war zones, crazy things happen, of course.
Let's hold on for a second.
Movie theater?
So people know what you're talking about. This is this we did not play. This is Louis Gohmert on that same Heritage radio show saying that very thing. Well, just let's play it and you can listen. I mean, and this is just pure insanity.
They do have concealed carry permits in Colorado. Colorado does have concealed carry permits.
Yeah. Well, it does make me wonder, you know, with all those people in the theater, was there nobody that was carrying that could have stopped this guy more quickly? I mean,
now, the idea that somebody's sitting in a theater at midnight with their firearm, first of all, that in and of itself sort of terrifies me. But be that as it may, they're a very responsible citizen. We're not talking about security guards here. We're just talking about a citizen who just, you know, carries heat to a theater. The idea that in a darkened theater, while you're watching Batman, that, this guy's going to stand up in a crowded theater and take out, Clint Eastwood style, this guy coming in with, automatic weapons, wearing a Kevlar vest, we don't know what other body armor is just pure insanity. And you're right, it just feeds into this narrative of we've got to arm ourselves to the teeth. This is the way to deal with this problem.
But these guys are children. I mean, they've shown it on refusing to, you know, they're like Ayn Rand's sociopathic hero, which in the end is just little boys that never reach puberty. I mean, that's what these guys are. Like when you used to play, I know it's not so PC anymore, Cowboys and Indians or whatever game you played when you were kids, when you ran around and pretended to shoot guns and whatever. There are guys who still think the world works that way who are making legislation. And, I mean, it's just so patently stupid. I mean, the clearest case of this being, of course, which should be a much more famous case if it were covered more clearly, the Tucson shooting where the first guy on the scene who had a concealed weapon almost shot the wrong person. He almost shot the guy wrestling the gun away from Jared Lochner. That was in broad daylight in a parking lot. Okay, in a movie theater, you're not going to know who to shoot. People aren't trained. People aren't used to being under that kind of pressure. I mean, insanity. It's so utterly stupid that this. I mean, again, it's embarrassing in so many ways. Every time Louis Gohmert opens his unbelievably stupid mouth, he's embarrassing. But that these guys are making legislation just tells you everything you need to know. And again, it also takes us back to the big waste of money, time, and whatever that we just spent on Fast and Furious, a completely bogus and, according to a fantastic report in Fortune, exaggerated and really mostly not true scandal where suddenly the NRA decide they care about guns and not people with guns, right? Because guns aren't supposed to kill people. But suddenly they did. And made sure that everybody, including a bunch of cowardly blue dog Democrats, wasted their time voting to condemn Eric Holder. Mind you, there are other reasons to go after Eric Holder, like not sending anybody from Wall Street to prison. But on this made-up scandal, and while they're doing that, you know, there's 33 states that haven't closed the gun show loophole. And a guy who can't get on an airplane can still buy a gun because of terrorist ties. And you know, you can go and buy all sorts of guns and guns that show up in criminal and crime scenes can't be traced because of these T-Hart amendments that are attached to these funding bills, so they can't share the information. And because the NRA doesn't want it to happen, there's been nobody running the ATF since 2006. President Bush couldn't get somebody appointed after that, and Obama hasn't because the NRA will block any vote in the Senate. So there's nobody even running the darn organization. I mean, so we you know, everything they've done to undermine stopping criminal guns making their ways to criminals. But then they're freaked out by when their handiwork comes to fruition. And then again, most of that scandal isn't even really a scandal, but whatever. You know what I mean? I mean, it was exaggerated. So this is what we're dealing. I mean, it's horrifying. And I'm sorry. I'd like to joke here on Friday, but I mean. how angry it gets me that 12 kids that were sitting there minding their own business watching a movie are dead. And they're dead now because of the culture created by the NRA and the politicians that they've bought off. I mean, again, I don't know the exact story, but it always happens this way, I can promise you. The gun show loophole was the reason one of the Columbine guys got their hands on guns. The fact that the mental records were not shared as they should have been was the reason why the Virginia Tech shooting took place. Jared Loughner had been rejected by the military, something that should have been shared and would have precluded him from getting a gun. There's always a backstory here, and there will be one with this one. I promise you. We'll find out what red flag was missed and what way it should have been stopped. And if we were spending all of our time trying to stop these things instead of on things like Fast and Furious and other ridiculous wastes of our time, we could probably stop most of these things.
Right.
And it's horrifying.
This is a very stark example of corporations, essentially through their trade organization, the NRA, just offloading the cost of their doing business. And
exactly
in this
right.
instance, you know, it's a very hard argument to make that they're serving an essential function in this country. you can make the argument, well, you know, people want to drive their cars. So, that mitigates the implications of pollution. And I suppose, people, there are some people who go out and shoot deer. I got neighbors, upstate.
But nobody's trying to take that. The NRA is unnecessary because no one's trying to take that right away. Nobody.
Absolutely.
I do not know one person who's an activist on the side of trying to get better gun safety legislation. I don't know anybody who wants to take away anyone's right to hunt. I know very few people. I'll admit there are a few here and there that want to get guns out of people's homes. I don't. I think if someone passes a background check, legitimately does that, if they want to keep a gun in their home, they have that right. I don't think that right is guaranteed in the Constitution. I think they've completely bastardized the Second Amendment that had to do with people protecting this country because there is no standing army. But I personally believe that, yes, in my view of the law, someone should have that right. But I'm not going after that either. That doesn't matter because every time I mention any of the stuff I mention, the righties come after me with those kinds of straw arguments that all we want to do is take away people's guns. But the NRA is a completely unnecessary organization. No one is blocking people shooting for sport, which, by the way, I used to do on a riflery team when I used to spend summers in New Hampshire for a number of years. So I obviously don't have a problem with that. As well as hunting and other things. This has nothing to do with that. It has to do with, it just came out a few weeks ago that Florida is not even conducting background checks on people that are getting concealed carry permits. So beyond people getting guns to their homes, there's still post-George Zimmerman are people who are not even having to go through a background check to get a concealed carry permit. I mean, what kind of civilization exists that way? It's just, it's unbelievable to me. So I'm sorry. I know we didn't want to spend this much time on this issue.
No. I mean, it's a horrible tragedy, and I know you've dedicated a big chunk of your life to this, and you're passionate about it, and I appreciate it.
I promise I'll make at least two or three jokes before the show's over.
Well, let me give you a chance. Moving on. I don't know if this is because I live on the East Coast and we don't have these here, but what is Chick-fil-A and why should I give a crap?
Well, Chick-fil-A, or filet, I suppose, as it's supposed to be pronounced. It's kind of like the new
Chick-fil-A.
Domino.
Now I get it. I didn't know. I see this keep coming up on Twitter and I'm like, is this some type of like? Is this like a singer that I'm gonna have to deal with, Milo? Like, I wanna listen to some Chick-fil-A, and I'm like, I have no idea.
Taking over for the new judge taking over for J-Lo what do you call it?
It's like, oh, she was there with Katy Perry and who else? Like at the Music Awards or whatever it is, but all right, so tell me, what is Chick-fil-A?
Well, look, I'm sitting right now on the highway on the way to visit some relatives, and we're sitting here. There's a playground at McDonald's where my kids are playing.
Nice.
McDonald's basically is like Tavern on the Green compared to Chick-fil-A, okay? Chick-fil-A is like probably literally every part of a chicken you didn't ever want to eat stuffed into a sandwich. I mean, it's just it's disgusting. And I thought that before I knew their politics. So now I feel better knowing their politics. But it's owned by sort of the types of people that own Coors in the past before it was sold to Molson and Wendy's before sold to Arby's and some of these other very right-wing companies, the Koch brothers, essentially. But they're religious conservatives, and so they've got they donate money to a whole number of anti-gay causes, and they've been called on it, and they came out and recently admitted that people were arrogant to overturn, you know, I'm paraphrasing here, to overturn God's law, you know, when it comes to marriage, because, you know, God did have a law.
I got a quote.
You know, when it came to marriage, which is why the Lovings were able to get married with no problem.
I got a quote here from the Chick-fil-A president, Dan Cathy. He says, I think we are inviting God's judgment on our nation when we shake our fist at him, and say, we know better than you as to what constitutes a marriage.
Right.
Well, you know, it's so funny because this is the argument I am constantly making as to when my wife Nikki disputes the fact that she is my chattel. I'm like, you're shaking your fist at God. He made it very clear that your type came from my rib. And that I own you once you become my property slash wife.
She's lucky you had a spare rib.
Right. And nice.
I didn't even mean that one. No, that's terrible.
And on top of that, I'm pretty sure that God's plan involved multiple wives. Now, I'm not sure I want to sign up for that, but... and he goes on to say, and I pray God's mercy on our generation that has such a prideful, arrogant attitude to think that we have the audacity. That's that dog
Uh-oh.
Whistle. Exactly. To define what marriage is about, because we know how untraditional President Obama's marriage is.
Right. Well, I would just like to know what's this guy's name? The son of the founder?
This is Dan Cathy.
Dan Cathy, I'd just like to get in touch with him and see when we can schedule his stoning for the fact that his restaurant's open on the Sabbath.
Oh.
I'd also like to inspect his clothing and see if there's two different types of thread used, because if there are, then we can stone him for that. I'd like to know if he'd like Newt Gingrich and other current conservative Christians who have committed adultery to be stoned, and not stoned in the good way, by the way.
I understand.
You know, I'd like to know all that, because obviously he sticks to the letter of the Bible, the letter of the law, so to speak. So I want to know all the other things. I noticed that he said the restaurant closed on Sunday in respect of God, but if they're still following the Old Testament, which they're supposed to be, it is one of the testaments after all, then as far as I'm concerned, if he's open on the Sabbath, it's time to stone his ass. And I'd like to know when he'd like us to do that. I mean, because obviously he follows this thing closely. I'd also like to know about selling... that's true. I've got sons. I don't know if I can sell them this slavery, but you have a daughter, Sam, so you should find out what a good price is for your daughter.
Oh, no, I've already priced
that out. Because you can sell her into slavery.
I've already done that. I've already priced that out. No, I think there's a section of eBay where you can go in and just sort of dip in and see what you could get.
I mean, it's just always it's always the same with these guys. They're good Christians, quote unquote. They follow the Bible, but they just happen to only care about the gay and abortion stuff.
Right. I mean, I'm not sure how explicit the gay stuff is in the Bible, but it doesn't. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter, because he apparently knows what God wants, because he has sat down with him, as in God.
Right. He knows God's will, which we do appreciate his help on that. And luckily, Jesus never said anything about helping poor people, so that's good too.
Yeah. No, that's right. And. Nor sort of, you know, taking all sorts of parts of that chicken. I highly doubt Chick-fil-A, and I have to admit, I think yesterday when you said we should talk about this, I thought it was I thought it was like the next bad music that I was going to have to listen to from my daughter, but I highly doubt their chicken is kosher.
I'm going to doubt that, too. I'm going to go ahead and say rabbis have probably not blessed it. probably recoil at the sight of it. And maybe, you know, now that I'm a good East Coast boy turned Midwesterner, I'll have to invite you on a road trip with us. We can stop off at a Chick-fil-A. You know, who knew? I mean, the local McDonald's here in Danville, Illinois, there's a picture of Gene Hackman. And Dick Van Dyke, apparently they're both from here.
Nice.
And proud. So, you know, there must be a Chick-fil-A around the corner. And we could always go check it out. And before you puke.
Now, how did this become is Chick-fil-A a big, is it huge in the Midwest? I mean, is it all over the place?
It's big enough. I wouldn't call it huge, but it's big enough. You know, it's around. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
And I don't know, you know, I don't know exactly which parts of the country. And I mean, I know it's out here, obviously. I think it's around a lot of the country. You're just lucky to be spared of its graces on the East Coast. And but I have to look up to see exactly where. But, you know, it's a big enough company that when the head, you know, guys are giving money to all these different propositions to ban marriage and ban gay adoption, I think other things too. And then, you know, they don't even try to sort of sugarcoat it, but coming out and call the rest of us arrogant because they know better than us, you know, then it becomes kind of a thing. So that's how it got out there.
All right. Well, we just have a couple minutes left here, so we got to do our weekly Romney bashing, because he's just, I mean, we don't really have to bash. It's really just sort of, you know, we report and Romney self-flagellates in some fashion. I wanted to talk to you about a conversation I had with Glenn Ford from Black Agenda Report. Let's save that for next week. He came on. He made some interesting arguments about why we shouldn't be supporting President Obama. But let's take a little time next week to talk about that. Because Romney is, it's pretty stunning. And I want to start here because this—
Did you hear about the help? Did you hear about what he said to the waiters, or about the waiters at this fundraiser?
Not again. When was this? No, this is a news story?
This isn't the beginning of a joke. I know this sounds like the beginning of a joke.
When was it? This week?
This is the last few days, and I haven't seen it picked up. I mean, I guess there's so much out there on Romney. It's sort of like,
the guys in the office right now are just looking at me because I'm just, I can't even keep up with this guy. Every time they put him out in public now,
he said something.
He said
the middle class, you know, to all of his rich friends at this fundraiser. I think it was in Alabama. I don't remember where it was exactly. It's somewhere in the South, I think. And he said, everybody here remember, you know, there's some tough times here out there for the middle class, like the people that are serving us here right now. He referred to the surfers and their middle class ways, you know, kind of in the way he usually refers to distant aliens that he sort of knows, has heard a little bit about, but doesn't quite understand. I mean, he still doesn't get that in America, you're not supposed to, you know, or really almost anywhere, the things that you're not supposed to bring up, like the poor people, the peasants that happen to be serving us, you know, we need to feel compassion for them. So there's Mitt Romney for you.
That's his attempt at, don't forget to tip your waiters, but actually don't tip them. Don't forget that the sentiment should be to tip your waiters, but don't tip them. I wonder if that was his message of saying, like, hey, you know how you normally shit on the wait staff here? Oop, I shouldn't have said that word. You know how you normally crap on the wait staff here? You know, today, look, I'm in a little hot water. So if you could just ease off, everybody, please be polite to the servants today, please. But no, the thing that I wanted to bring up, because, you know, we're talking about this, is that Romney is now getting plaudits in the right-wing nutosphere, or whatever they call it. I saw Limbaugh is now excited about this because Romney's now coming out swinging hard, and he has now adopted the Breitbartian narrative that President Obama wasn't properly vetted by John McCain, and we're going to do the vetting this time, which means that...
That's why I never heard of Reverend Wright. Have you ever heard of that guy?
I never heard of Reverend Wright. I just heard of this name, Bill Ayers.
Ayers, something like that. Yeah, who's that guy?
But here's the part that really sort of baffles me, and I just can't get at... What...
in what universe does anybody care about Chicago style politics? Like when they, when they accuse, I mean, I'm just like, why? Like, I just stand back in awe at the sheer incompetence of these people. When they accuse President Obama of Chicago style politics, like, I get what the whole thing of like Nancy Pelosi and her San Francisco politics or values. I get
wink,
that.
Wink, wink.
I get that.
Right.
Gays are trying to take away your guns or whatever it is, or they're going to, you know, cats and dogs are going to reign because gay people are not ostracized. I get that. But who is it?
Living together.
Who do they think that they are? Like, what whistle does this dog whistle? Is this supposedly like, are they talking about the people who are over the age of, let's say, 60, who are from Chicago, who might be aware of a certain brand of politics? Is like that their market? Who in the world? Because it seems to me that you got three or four states in the Rust Belts who, when they think of Chicago, is like, oh, those are my values. I'm from the Midwest. Right. I mean, I don't get what this is about.
You know what? I mean, it just shows how old they are, and it's funny because it's like, you know, Chicago style politics. Hey, did you know Al Capone lived there and Obama lived there too? I don't know. At some point, their ideologies may have come in contact. I mean, that's kind of it's the sort of thing that would remind me of a campaign you'd run against Al Smith in like 1928.
It's,
you know what I mean? It's a rum Romanism, and it's an anti-Catholic type thing. But what they don't get is, you know, there are people, this isn't the 1930s and 40s anymore. There are people with names like, oh, I don't know, Alito and Scalia in the Republican Party. It's not like the Republican Party is no longer just the white Protestant, you know, party against everybody else. So,
it's supposed to be about, I think it's supposed to say something about corruption or being hard nosed. Like, I don't even know what it's referring to.
I think it's a mobster Italian slur, but again, it doesn't work anymore.
I thought it was more about like dirty, corrupt politics. But I mean, this just goes to show you that like all it says to me is like, oh boy, the Midwesterners must really appreciate that because they're also from. I mean, Chicago's the big city in the Midwest. Like, you know, I think if you were to say, like, New York politics, okay, Jewy, urbane,
right.
You know, we don't want any of that type of thing, you know. I mean, we would hear that all the time before 9/11, and then it, you know, slowly
that
made a comeback.
That connotation is long gone. I mean, I think they think that there's still this connotation to Chicago in that way. And again, I think it's a very 1930s, 1940s, 1950s kind of, oh, look at the big city with their Italians and their – but that's just – as someone who lives in the Midwest and has for 5 years now, I can tell you that's just not the view. Nobody uses Chicago as a slur that way out here. It's actually looked in a pretty positive way. So, again, you're exactly right. I have no idea what the hell they think they're accomplishing. I think I know what they think they're accomplishing, but they're not.
What do they think they're accomplishing? Does this have to do with like – Is this supposed to be about black people? I mean, I just don't understand.
No, it's Italian. It's Capone, you know, it's mobster, union, Capone, you know, this, that kind of thing. And again, when the Republican Party was the bulwark of, you know, white Protestant American values who hate, you know, who could take on immigrants, and back then immigrants didn't mean Hispanics, they meant Italians, Irish, then there was something to this. But I don't know about you. I actually know a few people with Italian and Irish names that are now Republican.
I don't.
Names like McCain, McConnell. It doesn't work anymore because that's not the breakdown of the parties anymore. Basically, they're trying to use a slur that had like that by date was past expiration about 50 years ago. That's the only thing I can think of, unless it's something else I don't know.
It's just unbelievable to me. And of course, you know, he can't shake the taxes thing. He sends out Marie Antoinette to say, basically, you people don't deserve the taxes.
my favorite Ross Perot-ism ever, by the way.
What is that?
When Ross Perot went to the NAACP and said, you people work hard. You know, you people. I like you people.
Right.
That kind of thing. And so I've always enjoyed that one. And that, you know, and Ron, I mean, just every time they open their mouths, they just show who they are and how separate they are from most of the living universe. So I just say keep talking. I want them to keep talking because they're awesome.
Well, that I mean, that's
the
point.
It's a variety show.
They have been pretty smart about keeping him under wraps. I mean, he has done about literally 1/8 of the public appearances in swing states as President Obama. President Obama is now actually, it seems, in a very quiet way, seems to be trying to put Texas in play.
Which I like. I've always believed that, man. If you expand the map, I've always said this. I think the last, I mean, I would try in Texas to put it as close, you know, I think it's going to pop in 2016 or 2020 when the Hispanic and younger population there gets big enough. But I would look at Arizona, Missouri, a few other states like that. I would literally carpet bomb one of them the last 2 weeks with TV ads and mail and whatever, just to play psychological warfare and freak the Romney people out. That would be my plan.
It's pretty stunning. I think this campaign is. I think this campaign is largely over. I mean, frankly,
I do too. And I think people need to understand that because everybody gets freaked out by these day-to-day polls. I think people just need to understand they mean nothing. As everybody should have learned in 2000, it's the state-by-state stuff that matters. One poll in Virginia suddenly shows the race tied, when every other one has shown Obama 5 to 7 points, and everybody starts freaking out. Again,
there's a poll. There was a Pew poll that came out in Virginia a week and a half ago that showed Obama was up by 14 points when you factor in that Virgil Good. Why isn't that working? Darn it. Virgil Good is when he is included on the ballot, which he is on the ballot for the Conservative Party. Virgil Good is creates a 14-point lead for President Obama there.
Yeah, I will say this right now. Unless some enormous thing happens, that, I mean, Virginia actually, he won Virginia by more than he won Florida and Ohio by. Virginia shot past these two states as a lean Democrat swing state. I will say right now, that unless something huge happens, again, huge things can happen in politics. Weird things can, you know, can be found out that you never knew. Maybe Obama wasn't vetted, although I don't believe it. Or a terrorist attack or a natural disaster or something that shakes everything up or a financial crash or any number of things. But if nothing shakes things up, I will tell you right now, I would put my money, $10,000 to quote somebody, on Obama winning Virginia.
All right.
It's heading into his column. It's gonna, you know. So you know, for people out there, you know, I guess there are some people out there that don't want Obama to win, who are still progressive. But if you do, I would say, you know, remember, I worked in polling for a number of years, and polls swing a little bit, and margins of errors for a lot of these polls are 4, 5, 6 points, and in the end, most presidential elections are only won by 2 or 3 points. So Something changing 1 or 2 points tells you nothing. So it's just, you know, in the end, Romney is going to have a very difficult time turning over enough Obama states to win this thing. It can be done, but it's going to be very difficult for him.
All right, Cliff. Well, thanks for joining us. Continue on with your travels, and I know you're spending the entire weekend at McDonald's in the playland playground there.
They've got some cots they pull out underneath the slides here. And they just kind of hook up an IV, and you get fry grease going right in your system. It's amazing.
Say hi to the Hamburglar.
But it's still healthier than Chick-fil-A. Still like to make that point.
All right. Cliff Schechter, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us, Cliff. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, buddy. Take care, Sam.
Okay. All right, folks. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Isabel Gillies, who is going to give us some movie recommendations. We'll be right back after this.
Yeah. Today is Casual Friday. Let us welcome Isabel Gillies to the show. She's going to recommend a movie or two to watch on Netflix. It's the only way I know.
Listen to the picks from Isabel.
IsabelGillies.com.
Yes, the wonderful musical stylings of Jimmy Reefer Cake, giving us IsabelGillies.com. And indeed, ladies and gentlemen, Isabel Gillies from...
Hi.
How are you, Isabel?
Good. I didn't hear the song.
You didn't hear the song?
No.
Well, Matt has really does not know how to work the board, apparently.
Matt, come on, man. I only get it once a month.
Well, we'll send it to you. Well, you know, I went back and I looked at some of you. Sometimes you do every 3 weeks.
Oh, well, that's good.
Isabel, now you're off on vacation, aren't you?
I'm on location. Not vacation. No, yeah, I'm in Maine.
Oh, what's that like? What's vacation like?
Here's the thing. It's not really vacation because I just moved the whole operation up to my parents' house.
And
so there may be some appearance of vacation because it's beautiful. I'm not in the city. The children can run outside. But still, I'm writing, I'm cooking, I'm washing dishes. It's the whole Magilla, just, you know, 10 hours north.
Yeah, I mean, you're a writer, I guess, yeah, but it's better than being in New York City.
Yes, it is. It for sure is.
It's like a sweatbox.
It's a lucky
here.
Thing.
It's like a hot box here.
I know. Is it hot?
Actually, today it's not so bad. It's just gray and rainy.
Gray and rainy?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're in a different weather situation up here. But I'm not even going to talk about it.
I got to tell you right off the bat, I don't know if I'm going to be able to watch the movie pick this weekend because I've got to travel. I'm traveling to Seattle. I'm not terribly happy about it. But I did want to ask your opinion about something. Because
yeah,
I did
well, what about the airport?
What do you mean, what about the airport?
Can't you watch it on your computer while you're waiting for the plane?
Yeah, I don't think you can, like, stream movies through the
sure
airport
you can.
Wi-Fi. What? No, you can't.
Yeah, you can. You can do Netflix. Yes, you can.
No, you can't. You've never done that.
Oh, I certainly have. I watch Netflix anywhere.
You can't do it at an airport Wi-Fi?
Yeah.
Seriously?
All you need is Wi-Fi.
Don't they, like, throttle the amount of streaming that you get?
Oh, in the airplane. I'm talking about in the airport.
Well, do you go to the airport 90 minutes like that? I mean, do you go how like what?
Yes,
do you do?
I do,
like,
Sam.
You go to watch a movie like 6 hours before your airplane takes off?
Well, you know, a little here, a little there. What if there's a delay?
All right. Well, if my flights get delayed, I'll watch the movie.
Yeah, keep an open mind.
No, I'm not.
Because this is a good one. I have a good one.
All right.
But anyway, what were we going to say?
Okay. All right. Here it is. This week, I guess it was last week, Myla, my daughter, who you know,
yes,
was writing in her journal. She's writing what she calls jokes. And she said, "Can I tell you a joke, Dad?" And so she told me a couple of the jokes. I said, "That's great." And
were you lying?
Was I lying?
Or were they funny? Were they funny?
Well, they were not funny at all. They were poorly constructed, and they were not funny. She doesn't seem to know what premise and punchline is. She doesn't seem to know anything about it. I mean, she can write. She writes the words, and then she calls them jokes. And
right.
I can't even remember what it was. It was like, hey, one guy said, "What are you doing?" And the other guy says, "I don't know." And then the guy says, "Okay." Like, it's not like I can't even. So, all right. So, I, you know.
That's because she's a kid. Can I tell you my big joke when I was a kid?
Yes.
Ready?
Yeah.
When is water not wet?
When is water not wet?
Yep.
I don't know.
When it's dry. I made that up when I was little.
Yeah, I mean, that's not funny, but at least that's really, I don't know why, do you think it's that funny now?
I don't even get it. Yeah, I sort of, something about it hits my funny bone, and it did when I was little, too.
Well, okay, I mean, let's be honest.
But I'm not funny in general.
Like, yeah,
so.
I was going to say, it's not like that was an age-specific type of phenomenon.
No. I've never, I continued to go on in the non-funny, but okay, so Myla's writing
non-funny
jokes.
At least that is
jokes.
Constructed like a joke, you know, or it's a riddle, okay? And so I went on Twitter and I said, my daughter's writing jokes in her journal. She told me them. They're completely unfunny. And people on Twitter just got enraged.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, come on. What, because you said that your daughter's jokes weren't funny?
Yeah.
That's
somehow
like,
I've
know...
emotionally scarred her by critiquing her jokes on Twitter. And then just to so what I did is I brought Myla and sat her down and I made her read all of the comments from the other Twitterers to see if she felt that same way.
Did she?
No, she thought it was perfectly justified that I critiqued her jokes on Twitter.
Well, what are you supposed to do? I can't stand that when your kid sings something or draws something, and what you're supposed to be like, oh, it's beautiful, when it's sort of not. Can't you? Because they do so many amazing things that you do want to say they're great, but sometimes, you know, they're not. It's not so great.
I was encouraging. It's just like I'm commenting it on Twitter. Now, I didn't make her sit down and read all the Twitter comments. That would have been inappropriate.
Well, but you know. I mean, it's like when I used to do interviews for this little preschool, and I'd interview the parents, that they'd had parents interviewing the parents to see if they were going to go there.
So wait, you were admissions for a preschool?
Yeah, but it was admissions, but how the school did it was that they had parent volunteers do it. I wasn't paid or anything.
Well, that seems
nor
like
do I have any
ripe,
real
that means that seems ripe for corruption.
Really?
Well, I mean, you could have been like, you know, I'll pretend like I don't know you guys, that you're not my best friends.
Oh, no. No. Well, I think we had to say if we knew them.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying.
But it's New York City, so I didn't know 99% of them.
Okay. And you didn't tell
anyway, they'd come in there every single set of parents pretty much would say, here, now we're talking about a 2-year-old, right? At this point, 2.9.
Right.
They'd say, here's the thing about, you know, Penelope. She loves books. She loves books. And, you know, I mean, she just sits there and she obviously she's not reading, but it's like she's reading. And what can we say? She loves books. Every single parent. And I wanted to say, guess what, Dingbats? Every 2-year-old likes books because it's pictures and colorful, and they're you can turn pages, and it's not just you guys, you know. And the one parent that would come in and be like, I don't know, she puts buckets on her head, and that's about it. Then I'd be like, let's go.
Well,
that day came to me
when Myla was 2. She loved books because she liked to chew on them.
Right, I know, but it's just all 2-year-olds like books. All 4-year-olds, you know, like something else. It sounded so moronic. I can't take it when people won't be, not critical, but sort of.
Well, this is the biggest part. This is the biggest problem with you know, that everybody's speculating with kids these days, because they get older, and then they wonder why, like, hey, how come my boss is not applauding everything I do?
How come I don't get a trophy every time I walk onto the one train?
Now, I gotta say, we do that with Myla. I mean, like, literally, it's like, you pooped. Congratulations.
Here's a
nice poop, I say sometimes.
Well, when they're potty training, then you gotta give them, you know, high five
Myla's
for 7 doing it.
Now, and I still give her compliments. But
well,
that's also sort of like Dali would also take a crap journal, had a crap journal, and that's what I'm trying to get her to do that.
Well, people.
He
even
actually had
my
a shit journal.
Son came in and wanted to show me what he had produced as an 8-year-old. Like, hey, Mom, check it out.
Because it was huge?
It was huge.
Well,
it was enormous.
You know, as long as – that's what I said to her. you can show me your poop if it's extra special.
Well, yeah, if it's the size of, you know, a four-year-old's arm, practically. That's what came out of him. He was so proud.
Would you take pictures?
No, but, with iPhones, you can.
You did take a picture.
No, I didn't. Wait, I just thought of another joke. We're going off topic, but right. For April Fool's Day one time, we made a piece of poo-poo out of blue Play-Doh and put it in the toilet just to see if my husband would think that was weird.
Wait,
on
you
April
did
Fool's
this
Day.
As an adult?
With the kids. Uh-huh. Yeah.
All right.
Funny. It was funny.
Maybe we should move on to the leave the comedy portion of the program. And
here's the thing. Well, we went to Potty Town, but that's okay. Potty Town's funny.
Right.
All right. Listen.
Yes.
I don't take criticism very well.
You don't?
And I'm a little bit sensitive.
Are you going to start to cry?
No, but after the last time you were doing IMs, I kept listening to the show, and you were doing them, and I heard one, and it says, couldn't Isabel Gillies pick something that's not a documentary? I mean, it's sort of like maybe they fed up.
You're and focusing
I thought
on
about
one
it. I thought
IM?
About, yeah, well, yeah. And I thought about it all
Isabel,
day. I kept thinking about it. And
I've gotten
thought,
at least two IMs that say that they really like your selections.
Well, here's the thing. So I took it under consideration, and I was looking and thinking about, nonfiction movies and everything. But I didn't pick one.
You didn't
pick one. And I'll tell you why.
Wait.
I picked another documentary.
Good. I like the documentaries you pick. You pick very good documentaries.
Well, thank you. And here's why. Because I always learn something totally fascinating. And when I'm watching a documentary, a lot of the times I think, okay, I'm going to go work for that, or I'm going to go, I didn't know about that. Maybe I'll buy a book about it. I mean, it's just.
Of course, you never do that, though.
Well, you know, sometimes I might. I don't think I actually have. But like with this one that I'm going to talk about today, I feel like it's changed my life ever so slightly, and that's what documentaries do. I mean, other movies do that too, but documentaries, and when they're on the computer, they're better. It's better than a nonfiction movie, in my opinion.
Because it's not shot necessarily with the same. Because when you shoot a movie, you are constructing the visual to evoke certain emotions, and there are times where you can get that from a documentary, but it's generally more you're capturing reality rather than creating one.
Right, and it's about the subject. You know, in a movie, a lot of it could be about a feeling that has to do with like being in space or something like that. It needs this huge screen, but with space. Documentary, it's just about the subject, right? It's just about a topic.
You're
so
only
it doesn't
watching
really need all that stuff.
Space movies, fictional movies about space.
Well, like, you know, Avatar or something is not so great on your iPad.
Yeah, that's true. It wasn't so great anywhere else either, frankly.
Hey, Avatar. I loved Avatar.
Yeah. Okay. I understand what you're saying.
All right. So
visually, it was, you know, but right. I get it. I mean,
I went by myself opening night.
That doesn't surprise me.
And cried. I sat next to I sat next to a kind of avatar. He'd been there all day.
And
he'd seen it a couple times already that day.
So you sat next to a guy who had been in there the whole day, and so you cried, what, just to impress
him? No, it moved me with those blue things flying around.
Right.
At the time, it did.
I understand.
It was like Titanic.
Honestly, Isabel, what would you say is the percentage of movies that you see, regardless of what they are, that you do not cry at?
4%.
Right. I would put it around, like, probably, that's, yeah, I'm surprised, actually, because I thought it would be closer to, like, 2% of the movies that you see.
Yeah, well, life is moving, Sam.
No, I understand. All right, so let's get to, speaking of which, let's get to the movie. What
is
the movie for today?
The movie is called Queen of the Sun.
Wait a second.
Queen of the
It's
sun.
About bees.
Wait, you.
It's about honeybees.
You recommended this before.
No, I didn't.
Wait a second.
No,
I've
I haven't.
Seen
I
this
did not.
Movie. I interviewed the people from Queen of the Sun.
What?
Yeah. Like 3 or 4 months ago.
No.
Yeah, I did.
When? On your show?
Yeah.
Oh.
And I'm...
Wasn't it amazing?
I don't even remember the movie now. Wait, what was
oh
it?
Oh, my God. It is so fascinating. It is so unbelievably fascinating. And not only that, it is so important. Bees, honeybees, as it turns out. And you know, it's like there was that big animation movie about bees, right?
Right.
With Seinfeld. See, we know that they're incredibly...
Wait, what is it, Matt?
The show that we interviewed them on, Taggart Siegel and John Betts of their movie Queen of the Sun, was on April 10th. It's about the global bee crisis.
Right. Yeah.
Go back to the April 10th show.
April 10th?
Listen.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, I mean, it's a good movie. And, you know, I mean, it's not like this audience hasn't been exposed to it, though. I mean, I guess April 10th was...
It was like yesterday.
It was like yesterday, and it was also a time where I guess you're not listening to every show.
No, it's hard for me to listen to the show.
If I'm
on the road.
Apparently, when were you on the road in April?
On the road, like in the street.
Well, actually, it's super easy. I mean, it's
what? How do you listen?
What?
On your computer.
Isabel, you're not aware that you can podcast this show and put it on, like, your iPhone?
Well, here's the truth. I don't really know what an iPad is. iCast, whatever that is, the podcast. Not really sure what that is.
You're not sure? We've been... Isabel.
I listen to it on my computer.
You've been coming on the show for 8 months.
But I assume people are listening to it on their computers.
But she could figure out how to get Netflix at an airport.
Right.
there are certain things
I
know.
Maybe this is a good time to tell people that you are not 98 years old.
I didn't. I just got an iPhone. I had a BlackBerry before.
Did you ever have like a? Do you have like iTunes?
Not really.
Well,
because I don't go when I'm on the street. I'm not tuned in. Oh my God! Is someone laughing at me?
Well, only
am I being
there's
laughing?
Only two people laughing at you in the office, but I imagine there may be a couple more, either laughing now or in when they listen to this on their iPod. Their newfangled iPod. I think they've taken iPods off the market. I don't even think they sell those anymore. That's how far people have advanced in this.
Well, I'm not that, I know. Now I'm embarrassed. I just thought you listened to it on the computer.
Did someone have to help you with the phone today? Did you get, like, did Peter have to dial the number for you?
The phone is from 1983. It's the most familiar sort of thing in the house.
Like a dial? Like there's a rotary phone?
Oh, yeah. I can't move around. If I had to go out, you know, into another room, I couldn't.
By rotary, I meant the thing that – the dial pad that you –
Yeah.
Never
with
mind.
With the – when you had to go, you know, 8, it was too really far away.
Right.
And yeah, we have them. I'm in Maine.
Maine, they don't – yeah.
I am in Maine. I'm looking at, you know, I mean, it's like 50 years ago here.
Yeah, they had phones 50 years ago, but there you go. So,
well, I didn't know about that you could have it on your iPhone.
All right, well, we should sit down and I can show you how to put the show on your iPhone.
Yeah, because, yeah, that would be good.
But regardless, Sam,
I don't really believe in walking around the streets listening to something because I think that's how you get hit by a car.
Well, it does if you actually walk in front of the car.
But you're a little tuned out. You're listening. You're interested. You know, when I listen, I'm sitting there looking at the computer and just listening.
All right.
Can't do much else. Maybe I could eat a sandwich.
Yeah. Well, I mean, theoretically, I mean, you should have your hands free. You know, you know, you don't have to keep your hands on the computer.
Right, unless you're tweeting.
I get into that.
On another.
All right, so
system.
Queen of the Bees.
Yeah,
and then
listen.
Watch
Queen of the Bees,
and
it's got all this monoculture. Are you down with monoculture that it's going to ruin America and ruin us all?
Yeah.
Yep, moths in there and pesticides and
right.
Wonderful things about honey and now you've I
well, but now you can about. Now you can go and listen to the interview and you'll enjoy it. So now people it'll if you didn't watch the movie the first time, folks, Queen of the Bees, now's the time to do it and then go back and listen to the interview from April 10th.
I almost talked about the movie 41.
No, I've never watched and
I almost did, but it was on HBO Go, and I wasn't sure if that was legal.
Not the way that I use HBO Go is not legal, but I mean, some people...
No, but let's say for next time, because I was going to talk about this movie, which I thought might enrage you, called 41, which is about George Herbert Walker Bush.
Ah, yeah.
Because I'm up in Maine, you know, and that's
right.
Just where a lot of it was shot. But I thought, A, it might enrage you because it's a very sympathetic look at him.
Mm.
And B, I wasn't sure if it was legal because it's HBO, and I didn't know if that was copacetic with the Netflix thing.
I mean, you know, not everybody has a dad who has HBO who doesn't realize that there's an app.
Well, there is an app.
I understand.
And guess what you can do? You can download it on your iPhone and watch it in the airport.
There you go. Well, we have come full circle. Isabel Gillies, thank you so much. Always a pleasure. Enjoy the fresh air.
Thank you, Sam.
Okay, talk to you soon.
Always a pleasure.
Bye,
Isabel. Guys. Thanks a lot. Bye.
All right, folks. We've got let's take a break then we'll come back, but we're going to do we'll do a freebie Friday. Folks, become a member. No, not that. No, cancel that.
When you said break, I thought we would just take that as a break.
No, we'll take a break. That music signals that we're switching shows, and we're going to do a freebie Friday probably today.
All right.
All right, so let's take a break. And... when we come back, I got another 10, 15 minutes. We'll take your IMs. Oh, you don't have it? All right, just play any song. That's fine. All right, I'll be back in just a moment. All right, we are back. It's the Majority Report. I got to be out of here in about 11 minutes because then I've got to go to JFK and fly to Seattle, Washington, for the 1090 AM. I don't know what they call it. Event tomorrow night in Seattle. If you're in the neighborhood, stop by. Janet. Hello, Janet. I am just hi. As far as I know, when Chicago style politics are invoked, it involves corruption in the wards, patronage, and Richard Daley and Son style politics. That's what I thought. But I mean, that's just it goes to the how ineffective that talking point is. Like people are sort of like, yeah, I think it has to do with corruption and. But the other problem with that is that it suggests the old boy network. Now, it actually is the case, I think, in some ways, that one of the best criticisms of President Obama is that he is desperate, but is so intertwined with that old boy network that it's problematic. But I don't think that attack works. Lucia says NRA
completely clueless to today's tragedy. Yeah, we talked about that. Tweet earlier in the program. Oh, folks, you can now IM us from anywhere and simply look us up as majorityfm@jabber.org. majorityfm@jabber.org. I'm not exactly sure what the change that I made is, but Quidam basically walked me through it. And so there it is. Hi, Quidam. Yeah, Sammy joins the rest of the world. You can stream it on your phone. I don't know what that means, but Clower, I haven't eaten at one lately, but back in the day when I lived in the south of Mason-Dixon, Chick-fil-A was pretty good, and not every part of the chicken, just breast, fried, and peanut oil. McDonald's Southern Chicken Sandwich is exactly the same thing. Jay Tingle, I believe when GOP mouthpieces refer to Chicago-style politics, they may be suggesting Mayor Daley turned out an army of dead voters to turn the tide for Kennedy over Nixon in 1960. Yes, that's got to be what it is. And that would mean that you were 0 years old if you are 52 now. Now, we all know the vast amount of historical knowledge that your average American has, particularly when it comes to electoral politics, and particularly when it comes to elections from the 1960s. So to really have... And we also know how much Americans are just tuned in to concurrent elections. So it means that basically you would have had to have been in your 20s, probably, to even have any awareness at that time of what that meant. So you would be in your mid to late 80s now for that attack to mean anything. Never mind whether or not it's effective, just to mean anything. Like, literally, when I hear Chicago-style politics, and, you know, I'm reminded, I was aware at one point in my life about that Daley and that whole machine there. But when I hear Chicago-style politics, you know what I think of? Deep dish pizza. I think of pizza that is really not pizza. It's just like bread with sauce and a cheese on it. Bush and chains. 14 dead in Colorado. When does Netanyahu come on TV to blame it on Iran? There's reports that Hasidic organ harvesters are on a plane from New York to Colorado right now. There's money in them. There are mass killings. On a related story, Colorado man avoids jail after conspiring to sell machine guns and C4. A 35-year-old Colorado man avoided jail sentence on Wednesday, even after pleading guilty to conspiring to sell more than 30 machine guns and other weapons. Unbelievable. This is how bloodthirsty American Jews spend their vacation, travel to the West Bank, and pretend to shoot Palestinians straight out of the Nazi playbook. American tourists take aim at West Bank firing range. What fun. I don't know if it's just Jews, Bush and Chains. Maybe you should. You might want to. Is it really just Jews, do you think? Bachman, Representative Ellison has a long record with Muslim Brotherhood. Watch Stephen Colbert mock Mitt Romney's lame comment about waiters. Hey, Sam, here's an idiot you should get on your show. Roy Smith, NYU. This idiot needs to explain his advocacy and for an association with aiding and abetting Wall Street larceny. Roy Smith, NYU, needs to be investigated for aiding fraud on Wall Street. Massively overpriced Chipotle Mexican grill stock implodes. Weren't they the only people who were basically saying that they anticipated? You got to send me that link about Roy Smith, Bush and Chains, because it's not popping up. Chipotle was the only one who was saying that they were on some type of meeting, and they said that I think they thought Europe was going to go well for them. You should have P.S. Mueller on the show to talk about how much you both hate Avatar, says V. Rocco. I don't know if I hate it. It's just like... Gradman Thies. Hi, Sam. I'm developing a theory about differences on the left relating to levels of cynicism tolerance. I wonder what you think. Based on your own views and your conversation with Glenn Ford and Bill Scheer, I'm hazarding a guess that the actual policy goals of all three of you are not that far from each other. Yes, I would agree with that.
I would agree with that. I'm not 100% sure, but I think it's worth a hazard guess, a hazarding guess. It's just a level of cynicism or pessimism, if you like, regarding the current political situation that you're willing to tolerate alongside your policy goals that leads to debates between you. I don't know if I agree with that. To me, it's about tactically and strategically, how do you get there? That's why I thought Glenn Ford's argument that it is co-optation of progressives that I guess has long-term problems with President Obama is most compelling to me. I'm not sure if he makes the argument, we didn't really have as much time as I had hoped, but that somehow this is going to lead to better outcomes in 2016. I don't see it. I really don't see it. Okay, admittedly, a high degree of cynicism might be paralyzing, but too low a degree leads to the politics of a credulous Obama bot. Some might accuse Glenn Ford of the former and Bill Scheer the latter. In any case, all three of you and the rest of us on the left are trying to strike a balance between cynicism and completely falling in love with a presidential candidate or party that has chance at winning in any given race. I don't want to say it's a question of how pragmatic one is, but how cynical one is about the status quo that situates one on the left right now. Well, I mean, I think there's some of that, but I also think, you know, Glenn Ford sincerely believes that Obama is more problematic than Republicans because on many issues, he thinks that Democrats would fight against those Republican initiatives. When it comes to war and it comes to imperialism, I don't think that's the case. When it comes to something like domestic agenda with Social Security, I do think that's the case. At least to a certain degree. And it is true that Obama has brought sort of things that we would not have imagined that the U.S. government can do from a national security standpoint into a legal framework in a way that Bush didn't. But I don't know that Obama would be in a position to do that had Bush not done what he did. You know, so what happens in my estimation is Republicans push the envelope and Democrats bring it back, but we're still not back at the baseline. So I tend to believe that 5 years or 4 years of Mitt Romney, assuming it would be only four, which I don't know why that's a safe assumption. It's extremely hard to get rid of an incumbent. 4 years of Mitt Romney somehow would put us in a better place than Obama. I don't buy it. And I happen to think that it's better for the left as a movement. But Ford actually thinks Obama's actions are evil, which I think reflects a high degree of cynicism. I didn't want to get into that. I just assumed we were talking about evil in a metaphorical sense. But maybe not. I mean, I don't generally see the world as, evil is a little fantastical of a notion for me. I'm sure that, you know, I mean, I guess maybe, there are things that would constitute evil in my mind. That's a different type of argument. When we're talking about this stuff, when I say lesser of two evils, I mean I'm talking metaphorical. I don't, you know. Sam, remember how after Giffords' shooting, it wasn't the time to discuss conditions that may have led to Giffords' shooting? And remember how 3 months later, everyone who said that finally started to discuss it because at last it was the right time? What? You mean it was never seriously debated with only a tepid, unseed op-ed from Obama in a local paper? You mean no one even brought up the shootings again until the next shocking shooting?
which is also just not the time to discuss the conditions that may have led to the shooting. God, when is the right time to discuss all these shootings? It's going to be deafening. I got to go start holding my breath now. It'll be awesome if you do a podcast with Isabel, Sam, and I think it'll be even cooler that she'll never be able to listen to it. Yeah, Isabel and I are planning to do something like that. Agnes O'Liberalist, when you say Chicago-style politics, it has to give people legit reason to hate Obama. No one knows what it means, but it can be used instead of being honest and hate him for being black, just like socialist voters. I guess, but I mean, I just don't think that that carries the same connotations. Gulfstream 2, I have a documentary for Isabel I think she'll like. It's on Netflix called The Storing of the Weeping Camel. Well, send us an email. I'll forward it on to her or go to her website and tell her. Not to confuse, Cliff failed to understand the complexity of Chick-fil-A situation. The fact of the matter is that their sandwich is pretty effing good. If this were not the case, it wouldn't be a controversy. Jack in the Wood South and the University of Chicago is home for right-wing economics. The right conveniently forgets that. Sagita, tweet from the NRA. What do you think is the biggest threat to Second Amendment today? What? Still going on. Unbelievable. PF 1800, Chicago-style politics also means Democrats dominated. Chicago has been an unbroken string of Democratic mayors since 1931. But even still, that's my timer to remind me to get off the show so I can catch my trip out to the airport. Left Coast Marcus, the insensitive movie critic. Yes, we know about the shooting, but what did you think of the movie? Too soon? Dave with dignity, emotional response from the provinces, FU Chicago-style, pizza kicks ass. Ah, I understand. And having lived in Georgia for a couple of years, the corruption there gives a real perspective. Chicago is damn corrupt. Georgia is damned corrupt. Both founded on stealing land and exploitation. In the modern era, Georgia's politics have clearly emerged from a terrorist foundation. Also, I agree with Glenn Ford regarding the necessity of concentrating on building a sustained resistance and not allowing energy to flow against that end. Yes. That's why Ford's moral position is very strong. Concentrating on pragmatism is an either-or. Either serve the corporate masters or not. The Dems will adjust in response to successful organizing and power. The Dems are opportunistic, period. I think there's something to be said about that. Alexis Walker, amazing how pro-gun arguments defend hero fantasies requiring terrorism to occur instead of preventing those situations in the first place. Gomer's idea that a civilian carrying a concealed weapon to the theater is the answer. Yes. Well, that's what Cliff was saying. Like, it's all like cops and robbers and army men and cowboys and Indians. Isabel, all you need is Wi-Fi comment should be used in an internet Wi-Fi commercial using Beatles' All You Need Is Love. I would think it'd anger the Beatles fans. That is always fun to see the reaction of something that's sacred being tarnished. And the kids will think All You Need Is Wi-Fi is an original catchy song for Wi-Fi. Win-win, says Tom Frackman. I don't know where you're going with that one, buddy, but I read it. Jimmy Reefcake, I agree with you in Cliff's legendary rant on the culture of stand your ground and how the NRA kills. Feel free to play them out with this. Oh. Hello? Uh-huh. Okay, great. I'll be there shortly. Thank you. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, I'm about to leave. Long doggy. When I hear Chicago-style politics, I think of Rahm Emanuel and Rob Blagojevich, basically foul-mouthed a-holes. Also, don't Chicago politicians generally tend to end up in prison? This actually seems like less corruption to me. More politicians need to be in prison. And because Kidam hooked me up with the jabber, you will get the final I am of the day, but my, victim of the, I don't know why it's not working, victim of the selling off of the 360. Art imitating life or life imitating art? Watching Star Wars again, the Trade Federation of Star Wars ends up being used as a tool by evil forces bent on taking down the Republic and creating an empire. Back in the real world, the WTO is using its power to overrule U.S. laws. Is the WTO a tool of some evil forces?
Folks, remember, no show on Monday. We'll be back live Tuesday with Digby. But I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in. And my pilot light shining bright. I guess I'm where the choice is made, for the option where you don't get paid, for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive between the 101 and the 5. Do you know how far the detour takes you? Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in. And my pilot light shining bright. Shifted in and out of gear, waiting for my moment to happen. I don't know how much longer I can stay in, or how much more I got to pay to play in. I know somehow my life's got grading, somewhere before the credits fading. But my pilot light shining. Shine, pilot light shining bright.